My name's Philippa Bailey. I come from the University of Bristol's Cabot Institute, and that's the university's environmental research institute, and I'll tell you a little bit about that and how it all links together. But I'm delighted to have here today the artist behind Collective Breath, Neville Gaby. And then we've got two musicians from Yabba Funk. So we've got Linus Bewley and Helen McDonald. And then we've got Rory, who's a beatboxer, who's going to do something for us as well and bring his breath into our talk today. So I just want to also thank Jenny Warwin and Tammy Bedford, because they're the people who've commissioned Neville to do this work at WOMAD for World of Art. And also thanks to Neville for inviting people from the Cabot Institute to come and contribute. So just to explain the connection between Neville and Cabot, Neville was our artist in residence in 2012 and still retains a link to the Institute and is coming back and visiting us every so often. And so at Cabot, what we're interested in is how people live in a changing and uncertain world. And that's a really broad topic. So we cover things like how we find food security, water, energy, how we live with climate change, but also natural hazards and risks, and how we're going to build the cities of the future. And that the aim in Cabot is to try and bring researchers together from all different disciplines. So to really tackle these difficult questions, you don't just need scientists. You need scientists with engineers, with arts researchers, with social scientists. And we try and broker all those connections with Cabot and take it out beyond the university. So we're a community of about 500 people within the University of Bristol, but we're linked to many others across the country and across the world. So when Neville came to be artist in residence at Cabot, what we thought he was going to do was this project called Common Room, which was going to be to talk to everybody in the institute and somehow make one amazing thing that represented the whole shebang, you know, food, energy, water, climate change, natural hazards. And it didn't work out like that. So Neville went off and talked to people from all different disciplines and different research angles. And it was like little moments that really lit him up and kind of gave him a sense of where he wanted to go. And so some of the chalk experiments that you might have seen Neville doing earlier today came from watching mathematicians writing on their chalkboards and writing out equations on the chalkboards and thinking about chalk as a material. And then Neville's done some experiments with oil as well, and that came from talking to social geographers about landscapes of oil and things and the way that oil permeates all different parts of our lives. And then today we're going to talk about air, and I'm going to leave Neville to introduce that and where that came from. But I thought it might just be nice to let you know, so each of the days of WOMAD, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we've had a different air conversation, and I thought I'd just bring in some of the themes that people have talked about so far, because we've had quite different perspectives. So on Friday, Matt Rigby, who's an atmospheric chemist at the University of Bristol, he talked about how there are just tiny amounts of CO2 in our atmosphere, but how essential that is for making the climate that we all enjoy. Life wouldn't be possible on Earth without CO2. Even though we're changing the amount of CO2, that's obviously changing the climate system in really serious ways, but it's absolutely essential for life on Earth as well. And he also talked about greenhouse gases that are present in absolutely minute concentrations, but nonetheless really change the Earth system as well. So things like chlorofluorocarbons and the new chemicals that have come after them. And then Ellen O'Gorman, who's actually sitting in the back here, who's a classicist from the University of Bristol, she talked about winds being captured in the story of Odysseus and then being released and the catastrophic effects that had on Odysseus and his crew. And she also talked about the difference between breath as being something personal that, you know, inhabits our bodies and air as being something collective that we share. But just trying to kind of draw out the distinctions between breath and air. And she talked about breath as being the origin of communication. So without breath, we can't talk to each other, but also it's the origin of music and therefore communication and therefore community. So breath as being really the kind of force that underpins all of that. And about music as being playing your own breath. So Ellen's a woodwind player as well, and how the instrument becomes an extension of your own column of breath. And that's a really beautiful moment for a musician when the two things come together. And then Maria Fannin, who's actually also sitting in the front here, is a social geographer, talked about breath as the first autonomous act. It's the first thing that we do for ourselves when we're born. And, you know, it's the very beginning of us taking charge in the sense of our own lives, but it's also the last thing that we do. So, and it's something that we just take for granted, and we don't think about how breath links us then to all of the other species and, you know, particularly to the plant world, that sort of we're breathing in what plants breathe out and the linkage that that makes between us. And she was drawing on the work of a philosopher when she was talking about that. And then we had, I'm nearly there, we had Anita Ganesan, who's also a chemist from the Atmospheric Chemistry Group. And she was talking about how gases spread around the world. So she had a bottle of perfume and she sprayed it here at this edge of the tent. And then she watched as people across the room started to be able to smell the perfume as it drifted in the air. And that's what they do in their department, is to look at where are gases being emitted, and how can they trace back to their sources. So when countries say we're only emitting this much CO2 or other gases, particularly toxic gases, they can actually work out, are they telling the truth, and where did those gases come from? And she also told a really inspiring story about how we regulate our atmosphere. And so many of you will remember about CFCs and the damage that they were doing to the ozone layer, and that very quickly the international community came together and with the Montreal Protocol banned CFCs, and that immediately these guys who are measuring the air all the time could see the CFCs start to trail off in the atmosphere and get back down to levels where the ozone layer was no longer being depleted. And then finally we had Guy Blanche, who made this extraordinary contraption here, which is actually a portable biogas system. And he's been working with Neville to build this extraordinary instrument that Neville will tell you about. So he's a real sort of tinkerer and can make anything, I think. So that just draws together maybe some of the different views on breath and air that we've had over the last couple of days. And I'd like to hand over to Neville to tell us a bit about collective breath.
Thank you, Philippa. And thank you very much, all of you, for coming to hear our talk. In 2009, I was lucky enough to spend 4 months in Antarctica with British Antarctic Survey. I was asked in residence there at Halley Research Station, which is the most southerly British research station. And I wanted to make this extraordinary journey to do something very playful, to fly kites, of all things. But actually, it's an extraordinary, profound place to spend any time. And when I got there and I was spending all that time with scientists doing research, and it's pretty much entirely atmospheric research there, there's nothing else, it's white, it's empty, there's no birds or wildlife, I quickly got drawn into a lot of their kind of thinking and understanding. And Halley is also quite special because that is a base where in the 1950s, they began to measure ozone, only because they knew they could, not because they thought there was a problem, but just because they could. And so since the 50s, people have been going there and taking measurements yearly. And actually, that's the place which then told the world that there was a problem. So it was quite interesting, actually, to be there and to see that same machine, which has been there since the 50s, still functioning and still having data recorded every day. When I came back from Antarctica, I was invited to spend my year with Cabot. And I think having been there, it really changed a lot of my thinking. And then spending some time in the university with scientists gave me a kind of much greater understanding, I guess, of our world and where I wanted to go with my work. I think there was one occasion where, as part of Cabot, we had a group of people coming together from all sorts of different disciplines talking about air. So there was Matt, as Philippa mentioned, talking about measuring tiny particulates in air. And again, I started thinking of air as a thing, as a substance, in a way in which I never had before. And Eileen talking about playing an instrument and it being a column of air from the pit of her stomach to the tip of her instrument, which I thought, again, was a very powerful and poetic sort of description. So I guess for me, working at WOMAD was an opportunity to bring some of that thinking together, but also to think about sort of things that one could do collectively. And actually, I want to just mention two, One of the nice things about being here and about doing the talks is the people you meet and bump into and the kind of casual conversations that you have. So just a few moments ago, we were talking about silence. And it reminded me that perhaps one of the most profound experiences of being in Antarctica was standing in a place which was absolutely flat and white. And if there was no sunshine and it was cloudy, you couldn't see where your earth stopped and the sky began. And if there was no wind, the silence was really moving. Actually, the only thing one was conscious of was one's breath, which was really interesting. And then again, yesterday, I met a New Zealander who was here, and he said, oh, do you know what the Maoris do, you know, when they greet people from different tribes? And I said, no. He said, there is a ceremony. I'm sorry if he's here and I've forgotten the name of the ceremony, but actually, okay, so they exchange their breath. So actually, it'd be lovely for you to say something about it. But I thought that was, okay. It's a hongi. Okay, so the whole idea is that if you're meeting someone from a different tribe, what you do is you exchange your breath with them. And I thought, that's it. That's really what I'm trying to do here. And I think today, actually, we're really lucky. You've got three people who will talk about using breath in different ways. And I'm going to introduce Rory, who I only met yesterday as well, one of the other surprises of coming to WOMAD, who's going to do some beatboxing for us. Yeah. So I'm going to pass you over to the game.
Hello. Yeah, so I'm a beatboxer. Yeah, it's just the way I like to demonstrate and use my breath. So here we go. Thank you very much. That's what I do.
Brilliant. So thank you so much, Rory. That's incredible. I think, Linus, you're going to tell us a little bit about your take on breath.
So I thought perhaps I could just talk about my experiences with breathing, how I relate to breathing, and beginning with teaching science, I tell my children in science, breath, at the beginning you have the blood, the circulatory system goes round, picks up oxygen at the lungs, drops off carbon dioxide. We have this small little microcosm, and that breath is what keeps us alive, we all know that. And then on a bigger scale, we talk to them about what happens on the planet, and we've heard some words about that already this morning, and we're talking about greenhouse gases and how are they produced with sulfur dioxide, carbon dioxide, the CFCs that were mentioned before. So creating that awareness with children, but bringing it back to the individual child, what do you want to tell them, what do you want to teach them about themselves, about their own responsibility about what they're producing in terms of carbon footprint, but also responsibility about their own, if you're breathing, you're being. Okay, and how do you teach children to be? What is it about being? What do you want? How do you want to guide children? And I think, for me personally, the element of breath, the element of breathing, is about the discipline of staying with it, so that the manifestation eventually is complete relaxation. But the paradox here is that relaxation only comes about through quite a lot of discipline and hard work. And to begin with, to talk about as a musician, I play the saxophone. And the apart from perhaps muscles, using muscles for your lips to exercise, and the most basic discipline that you do as a wind instrument player, particularly saxophone, is long notes. And you just play a long, long, steady, long, long, long note. Just, and what happens is you could have a metronome, you have this sort of tick-tock set at a very slow pace, and you play this long note for as long as you possibly can, and there's a point where you feel fear. You feel that you're going to suffocate, and that you feel, and you push with that fear, and you think you're going to run out, but there's a point where if you can push through that, you push through that fear and you stay with it, the relaxation sort of kicks in. And this is something I experience also with swimming. I want to do a little plug here and mention, big up for Frank Water, because I'm swimming a 14-kilometer swim down the Thames this summer. And in order to do that, I've again had to work with a lot of fear. I mean, I couldn't swim 100 meters last year, and so I've had a number of lessons. And to work out the breathing when you're in water, not breathing underwater, obviously, but you're breathing out underwater, you have to exhale gently, gently, and then the point that you need to breathe is the point that you just start. It's called the catch. You put your arm in the water, you catch the water, and then you pull. And as you begin the pull, that's when you lift your head up. And my teacher said, only take what you need, only take what you need. Because at first, when you're doing this, you think you're going to suffocate, so you blow out underwater, and as soon as you, like you're drowning. And he said, after a lengthy watch, he said, Linus, you're not going to do 14K like that. If you're out of breath, you know. So it should be like you're walking. It should be relaxed, relaxed. But again, to get relaxed, you have to work hard. It's ironic. And the thing that I think the best thing of all for relaxation is the sitting practice that I try to do daily. I first learned it about 20 years ago and at the Shambhala Center in London. And one of the teachers who's connected with that organization is a Zen teacher called Sunryu Suzuki, who taught in San Francisco. He was from Japan. And I'd like to read just a page from his book about breathing. He refers to Zazen, which is the meditation practice of that particular discipline. It says, when we practice Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. When we inhale, the air comes into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. We say inner world or outer world, but actually, there is just one whole world. In this limitless world, our throat is like a swinging door. The air comes in and goes out like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think, I breathe, the I is extra. There is no you to say I. What we call I is just a swinging door which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. It just moves, that is all. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement, there is nothing, no I, no world, no mind nor body, just a swinging door. So when we practice Zazen, all that exists is the movement of the breathing. But we are aware of this movement. You should not be absent-minded, but to be aware of the movement does not mean to be aware of your small self, but rather of your universal nature or Buddha nature. This kind of awareness is very important because we are usually so one-sided. Our usual understanding of life is dualistic. You and I, this and that, good and bad. But actually, these discriminations are themselves the awareness of the universal existence. You means to be aware of the universe in the form of you, and I means to be aware of it in the form of I. You and I are just swinging doors. This kind of understanding is necessary. This should not even be called understanding. It is actually the true experience of life through Zen practice. And I was asked to bring an object, so to finish, the breath, particularly from, I find in my experience, is a tool, and that tool it's very useful in meditation because it has, it's not solid and it's moving. You can't put your finger on it. So logical mind can't kind of grasp and nail it down. You can't nail down your breathing. And through the tool of that, you might become connected with the fear that I mentioned before. And this fear could be a fear of death itself. And this fear drives us in a way that can create all sorts of pain and suffering for us. If we can get in touch with that fear, we can feel that we're actually clinging to life. And clinging to life has a sense of death about it, whereas accepting that fear and being aware of death actually has a much more sense of living and being fully alive. So if you pardon me, with my other hand, I'll take out my magical object. But this is from an Arti shrine, which is the type of shrine that I have at home. It's from my Buddhist shrine, and it's a crystal ball. It's not connected with seeing into the future, but it's supposed to remind you of the crystal clarity of your mind. So I'll finish just by showing you this crystal ball. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Linus. And Helen, would love to hear from you as a singer and songwriter and somebody who works with voices and other people's voices as well.
Hello. Hi, I'm Helen McDonald. And breath. It's the vital thing, and breathing. And what I know about, want to talk about with you, is basically about, it's like healing, the healing breath. Being a singer, what I found is that it is such a healing thing to sing, okay? And you know, the essential, it's not essential, but it is. It is essential, because everybody I know that sings or uses their breath, they you just have more longevity. It's a bit like what you were talking about, grasping life. And anyway, look, I want to show you. I want you all to go, everyone, everyone, keep it going. Keep it going. Just keep on. And while you're doing it, you're taking in a breath. And you're a low hum. Keep buzzing. Just be aware of taking in the breath and humming. Now I want you to go. To go back to going and I just want you to keep humming and breathing and be aware. Are you gonna faint? I think maybe I need to get you to buzz. Try and buzz. Okay, stop. Everybody put their one thumb on their nose. One thumb on their nose, and I want you to take in the breath through your nose, nice, until it's full. Okay, just go. Hold it and take out the breath through your mouth. Lean over a little bit and empty it. Take the other thumb and draw the breath and let that breath out through your mouth. One more time, keep your mouth shut and put your thumb on your nose and take up the breath. All the clean air is coming through the nostrils. Then let out the breath through your mouth, oxygenating that heart, that breath. I want you to buzz like a bee. I'm not trying to take his beatboxing thing off, but everybody buzz. So the way I want you to buzz, I want you to getting in the breath, buzzing. I want you to be aware of the air and the buzzing and the warming up of your throat box. It's all part of breathing and healing. Take that buzz into a hum. Make it sweet like honey. Like you're tasting honey. Sweet like honey. Push that air. Push it through the. Feel the breath. Coming through your nose and. Sneeze, pull. Keep humming. Keep humming. Because this side, it's your turn to go. Keep humming. Sweet like honey. This side, you are going to do a thing which is call and response. You're going to copy what I sing back to you, okay? It is this. You hummers, you are now going to respond, call and response with me. Keep going. We are ye. The breath heat. Breathing and healing, breathing and heal yourself with your breath. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. That was amazing and brilliant that we've all had a chance to use our breaths as well as hear other people using theirs. And thank you to Neville, to Linus, to Helen, and to Rory.